Welcome to episode 18 of Dad Can We Talk. I'm your host, Anthony Ray. Today I have a special guest with me. His name is Dustin Click. He is a father of four beautiful children. He is the HR manager at Walmart DC 7035. And I'm not sure if you remember, but you gave me my first walkthrough 4 years ago. I'll never forget it, man. Because I was working at Dollar General at the time, and I took a break to come over to Walmart and go through the walkthrough with you, man. And I was like, okay, the guy Dustin, cool. I remember you just walked me through case lot. You were like, can you do it? I was like, yeah. So it looks good to me. So, yeah, that was a whole 4 years ago, man. And now here we are today. So, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm really glad to be here.
So, on Dad Can We Talk, my first question I like to ask, I always like to know what your relationship was like with your dad. I just kind of like to go back and really understand what makes you you. Like, how did you get here? What was your relationship like with your dad?
Question. My dad and I, they tried to have other children, but they had some miscarriages and things like that. So my mom, she would often refer to me as her miracle child, you know, and I really didn't understand that, you know, until I got really older, you know, what that meant for them and what that meant, you know, as a parent to, you know, try and then finally have, you know, what one child. So my dad and I, really good relationship. He worked a lot when I was a child, and really my whole life. He's a very hard worker. Never felt like I missed out on anything, but you know, he wasn't a typical 9-to-5 kind of person. So he worked a lot of nights and weekends and things like that to put food on the table for the family and make sure that I never really wanted for anything growing up. Mm-hmm. Always took care of me. It really was a good example. Made sure, especially in my teen years, that I was in church and, you know, really had that good base. Taught me a lot about responsibility, mm-hmm. respecting other people, believing, just because you believe something one way, you know, it's okay for other people's too. From my dad. One of his sayings, you know, that he would say a lot as I was a kid, that, you know, a dollar was a lot of money. You know, if I'd ask for like a pack of gum or, you know, a drink at the gas station or something like that, and he'd be like, nah, son, you know, a dollar, that's a lot of money. And that really kind of helped me, you know, kind of put things in perspective, you know, as I got to where I am today.
Yeah. So, and just knowing that you had that relationship, that great relationship with your dad, and being able to see his example and seeing the way that, you know, like you say, him teaching you the value of a dollar, seeing how he, just the way that he treated others, the way that he treated his children, the way that he treated his wife. How did that relationship, how did that experience affect you now as you are a father and a husband yourself now?
So today it's really interesting because, you know, like I said, I was an only child growing up, and I have four children, right? So mm-hmm. I never dealt with the sibling drama. You know, I never yeah. dealt with, you know, another person's in my seat, or, you know, that's mm-hmm. just a sit at the table, you know, a brother and a sister. And then my wife, she has a sister, so like, and my mom, she has a brother, but anyway, where I'm going with that is, you know, they've really all been able to kind of help and guide on sometimes. This is just what siblings, this is his role as a grandfather, right? Because I, you know, I've got to be the heavy hand, you know, lay down the law kind of person. Hey, we do this, we don't do this, right? But he can kind of come in and, you know, give kids, you know, that extra, you know, dessert at dinner, or, you know, hey, don't stress about this. It's really okay. You know, that kind of perspective, and I'm thinking, man, is this the same person who I grew up with, you know? And so it's really neat to see him kind of turn into that, you know, fun-loving grandfather. He, it's kind of funny too, because he's got a, he was always clean-shaven when I was growing up. He had a mustache, but now he's got this, like, ZZ Top borderline full beard, and he plays Santa Claus during the Christmas time, and so it's kind of neat to see him having that, you know, joyous, you know, self all the time with the kids. And it's really good because the kids really like him, you know, and it's really important, and they love him, and it's really important that, you know, kids have that relationship not only with their parents but other family members too. You know, it takes a village to raise, you know, your kids.
Definitely. That, and that's something that I'm learning, you know, as I'm growing as a father, just being able to keep my children, for one, I like the village mentality. I like for my children to see me and my interactions with other men, and, you know, like, my wife and I, we're just very social beings. And I believe that's something that's really important, because I think, especially in this day and time, it's something like, I think at times, sometimes people today, we don't really like the whole social thing. You know, so many people are just in their own bubble, you know, and they don't really reach out to, you know, everything is about my home, you know, what's going on in my house, what's going on with my family. And I think it's just so important. And I believe that God always wanted us to be within a group. If you, take it to biblical times. I mean, when you look at Israel, Israel always traveled as a unit, you know, right. They always traveled together. And I believe that was just so important for everyone to be able to stick together that way. And I believe that's just really how God wants for his people to be, man, because, you know, it's never a good thing to be in isolation like that. And I kind of want to veer off really quick, because this is something that I talked with a friend about a couple of weeks ago. I asked him the question, well, I seen the question from somewhere else. And there was a question saying that, should men vent to each other? And, you know, there was a big conversation. I know in the Black community, it's not something that we usually do, as Black men. I'm not sure within the white community, how it is, but in the Black community, we don't really, as men, we don't vent to one another. We don't have this relationship where we can talk to one another about things that we have going on. And I believe, you know, even our fathers were like that. And so we see what we see now. And it's hard to be a village when the men don't talk, you know, when the men don't have that relationship with each other. And I want to get your thoughts on that, you know, about the importance of men coming together and actually talking with one another and having accountability with one another.
Yeah, so it's fair to say that 2020 has been a very interesting year, right? So with all the stuff that's going on in the world and COVID and everything else, I have a hard time talking to other people. Yeah. I've got somebody I consider my best friend, I've known since my ninth grade year in high school. He and I, when we get together, we maybe say 30 words to each other, but it's just that, but we both have four children. We both work full time. We both have a house. We both have stressors going on in our life. And we just don't, you know, we don't open up. And, you know, my dad, as great as he was, he really doesn't open up, you know, on that kind of stuff. Like, I see visually, you know, how he handles things. You know, I could tell that if he was going to go build something, it was a stressful day at work. Like, if he went to the garage to go fix something, go build it, whatever that was his release, you know, to go do that. And I've kind of had that same relationship with my father-in-law too. Thankfully he's still around, and they both live about 15 minutes from us. So it's nice to where I could see them, but they don't really share their emotions. Mm-hmm. And I really think, and even kind of, you know, when talking about church, you know, like going to Sunday school, you know, when they ask you questions and things like that. I don't do a good job opening up, and I know that I need to talk to my wife, you know, about that, you know, about the struggles. And she tells me all the time, hey, you need to go, you know, talk to a friend, you know, talk to somebody, talk to the pastor. But you're right. It's hard for men to really open up, because almost that if I open up and if I show somebody my weaknesses, that all of a sudden I'm vulnerable. I'm less than as I, because I shed a tear, right? Mm-hmm. Or because I let my guard down, right? Yeah. And I think that we just all have to be honest with each other that it's really okay. You know, if I come to you and Anthony and I say, hey buddy, I'm just having a rough day. Can I just vent to you for a couple minutes, right? I think that we all need to get to a point where we can be okay with that. And that's a challenge.
Yeah, it's definitely a challenge. And that was one of the reasons why I started the podcast, because that was something that I realized. Now, I've always been a very open person. You know, if you talk to a lot of the guys in case a lot at the job, man, they will tell you, man, Anthony will tell you his life, you know, and that's just me, you know, because I know and I understand now that I understand the importance of it for me to get out, just get things off of my chest sometimes, and it always feels better. And then I also open myself up, because I understand that if most of the time, in my experience, when I open up to other men, then they're more liable to open up to me and realize that, you know, it's okay. You know, I'm not a person that's going to judge you, you know, because of the things that you might be facing in your life. And, you know, we all have something. We all have something that we have going on. You know, that's just life, you know, regardless of where you live, where you come from, your current situation in life, your job, whatever. We all have things that we go through. We all have challenges. And I think it's just so important for us to be able to have someone that we can trust. And I think it's important for us to also be that person sometimes, you know, that people can come to. I always want to offer myself to other men and let them know, you know, it's okay. If you need someone to talk to, please call my phone. You know, I would be upset with you if I know that you're going through something and you didn't say anything to me. Because when I tell my friends or my brothers that I'm your brother and I'm your friend, I truly mean that. And I want to be a person that anyone can come to. And, you know, I just think it's a very important thing, man, for us to be able to understand that thing. But, yeah, I just kind of wanted to go something that came to my mind just now. But I want to go on to the next question. You and your wife, you guys have adopted children.
Correct, yes.
And I wanted to ask you what made you guys decide that you were going to take the adoption route?
So we had our daughter already, and we had our youngest son the old-fashioned way, right? I thought we were done, to be honest with you. We had two children, a boy and a girl. Everything was great. You know, they got along good. We were at a good, we had a house that, you know, met our needs. Everything was great, right? And so, in fact, my wife and I, we had talked about it after our son was born, and we were like, yeah, you know, this is good. Two is a good number. We can handle this. We're done, you know. But what we didn't realize is that God had another plan for us. And so, my daughter, she was 4 at the time. Our youngest was 1. So, you know, stress of having, you know, basically a newborn or toddler, right? And then a four-year-old dealing with daycare, you know, and all that. My wife had got a phone call that she had a cousin in the Atlanta area that had just really made some bad choices in life. And this wasn't a cousin that we were kind of close to. It was just somebody you kind of heard about, you know, throughout the years. And, you know, we knew that she was having some challenges in life and things like that. But she had found herself in a really, really bad spot. So my wife and I, we actually reached out to her, my wife did, and said, hey, you know, no judgment. We understand that you're pregnant with a set of twins. We would like to help you. And, you know, would you allow us to adopt the boys? And she told us, she said, no, you know, life is going to get better. I'm getting myself clean. You know, I'm gonna do right by these kids. Hey, more power to you. We'll be praying for you. Call us if we can do something for you. You know, mm-hmm. So you fast forward when the babies are 6 months old, she ends up leaving the boys at her step grandmother's house. And she ends up in jail for meth and just a bad story all around. So the step grandmother and grandfather, doing the best they can, they end up getting like temporary custody through the state. They're raising the boys. Their plan is they're going to kind of raise these, they're going to raise these boys as their own. Mm-hmm. And so, but unfortunately, the grandfather gets Parkinson's and the grandmother gets a terminal cancer, right? So now we're kind of back in the picture. And so they don't know who the father is. You know, they can't, you know, they've been trying to locate a father. They don't know who he is. The mother's in jail. So really, my wife says, hey, Dustin, the Lord's telling us that we need to become foster parents and adopt these boys. Now, when we had the conversation about the boys, you know, originally, you know, I kind of wrapped my mind around that. Well, we had, you know, some time had passed, right? So I was not in that same frame of mind, but my wife was like, no, we're going to do this. And so I said, okay. And I said, hey, you put your mind to it. We're going to do it. So, but this is where we really saw God in the picture. My wife called the boys caseworker in Georgia, and we're not blood related to these boys. We're related to the step grandmother. So it makes a little bit more of a challenge when you don't have a blood relation to the children. So my wife calls the caseworker in Georgia, and the first thing the lady says to my wife is, no, you're in Florida. This is too much of a challenge to get these boys to you. You just need to, if you want to adopt, you need to focus on adopting some kids in Florida. You know, you can't go through Georgia. Well, the lady made a mistake, because don't tell my wife she can't do something if she's already got it made up in her mind, it's going to happen, you know? So my wife was like, are you saying there's no way possible or there is a way possible? And she's like, well, there is a way, but it's really hard. So my wife's like, okay, just what's the route we got to go to? She said, well, the first thing you got to do is become foster parents in the state of Florida. But, you know, that takes time. So my wife hung up the phone with that lady. She called the foster agency in Clay County where we live. And they said, hey, you're not going to believe this. We have a class that starts tonight. There's two spots left. Can you make it? And so she said, yes. So we became foster parents, right? We had to get our license here in Florida. Once we called the caseworker back and said, hey, you know, we're in the process of getting our foster care license. So the lady could tell we were serious, you know, about it. So we had to get, once we got our foster license, the state of Florida agreed to let the boys, because they were wards of the state of Georgia, because the mother was in jail and they didn't know who the dad was. And the other sad part to the story is they had no blood relatives that could take them in, right? Mm-hmm. So really, the silver lining is nobody was trying to stop us, right? We were just you know, the boys were two more kids in the state, you know, system that were wards of the state. So it was basically taking them from Georgia and making them now belong to the state of Florida. So we ended up having a caseworker assigned to us. We had random visits, and we did that process for about a year. And then the craziest thing, Anthony, you go in front of a judge. Do you want these children? Yes. Why do you want these children? Because we love them. Okay, let me see your record. The judge signs it, and it's over with. So wow. all that to, you know, to get us where we're at today. So, you know, but we truly went out on a, you know, a leap of faith. And I really credit my wife for, you know, really stepping up and kind of leading us there initially through that phase. We, you know, what's crazy is part of the state is that you have to have like a vehicle that you can transport, you know, all the children. We had just purchased a vehicle. We were, and this is where you can kind of see that God was really in it, you know? So I called the dealership that we had purchased the vehicle from, and I told them the story. They worked out us a deal for a minivan to where we were able to get a vehicle, right? The daycare that we were using, Shiloh Baptist in Orange Park, the daycare there, we went to the director, and she went to the pastor for us, and they gave us a great discount on childcare because back then everybody was in daycare. And so yeah. At the time it was, my daughter was four, the twins were three, and my youngest was one. Wow. So yeah. And they gave us a, like a buy one, get one rate. So we only paid for the same. So basically the twins went to daycare there for free, which we were very grateful for. And now it hasn't been easy by any means. You know, when we had four children, especially that young, Connor and Tyler, the twins, they were loved by the grandparents, right? Mm-hmm. But it's crazy, you know, when you get basically abandoned by your mother, you know, at birth, that's basically what happened from birth to six mm-hmm. months. They didn't have that love and everything. It's caused some mental issues still today that they're dealing with, and their pediatrician just circles it back, you know, to that original, you know, time in their life. And so it's getting better. Especially as they have more stability. Mm-hmm. The grandparents they were with, they did the best that they could. But, you know, sometimes the boys would have to go to a different house and sleep or a different family member and, you know, and sleep just so the grandparents could get breaks. I mean, you know, you're dealing with two 20-year-old boys and you're in your, you know, mid-60s, 70s doing the best you can. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's tough, you know. And so when the boys came and stayed with us, they were like, okay, well, where are we going to sleep tomorrow? And we're like, no, this is it, you know. And really, that's a powerful thing for a three-year-old, you know, mm-hmm. to be asking, you know. And so, but that's our story. So.
Oh yeah, man, that's something powerful, man. And like you say, it's definitely a blessing, man, because, you know, who knows if you guys didn't step in, you know, where these children would be,
right?
And you know, we can go through scenario after scenario, but at the end of the day, you know, God placed you guys in the right place at the right time, and everything was orchestrated perfectly, man. And, you know, I definitely commend you and your wife, man, because that's, you know, that's a tough thing. You know, I have a 4-year-old and a 3-year-old right now. And when I tell you, that is a challenge.
Oh, yeah.
Literally, man, it's like, some days I just don't know, you know, and I'm always telling my wife, you know, sometimes I don't know what to do, you know, because it's so stressful, you know. Once I get off from work, I have to directly get off work, you know, after being in case lot and throwing all of those cases, and I'm like tired and I'm beat down physically, mentally sometimes. And then I leave there and go and pick the kids up. And, you know, it's the middle of the day. And they are just, some days I'm like, God, please help me, you know, because once you pick them up, they're fighting and they're fussing and they're complaining about this. And it's some days it's like pandemonium. I'm like, I don't know what is going on here. You know, like some it's crazy. And I can only imagine having, you know, a 4-year-old, 2, 3-year-olds and a 1-year, man, honestly, man, I would probably go crazy, you know?
Yeah.
And it's, yeah. I mean, it's hard, man.
Yeah, there are some days, I mean, you know, and you just look back on it and you just kind of see that, hey, you know, God's got this, he's in control, you know, and that's all you can do some days. I mean, thankfully my wife, she's very structured because we both work full time as well, you know, during, you know, and we still both do work full time. And so, you know, she just had a really good routine, you know, in the morning, you know, we would, you know, make breakfast for everybody. We would go to work, they go to daycare at home. We would do, you know, family time, bath time, bedtime. And that was our routine, you know, and on the weekends, we always laughed, but we were always going to do something, you know, whether it was going to a state park or just going to a park. And somebody said, man, y'all are always on the go. And we said, yeah, if we were home, they'd be destroying the house. You know? That's what you got to do, you know.
So, yeah.
That's how we did it.
And it's funny you say that because last weekend, I think my wife had to work something. Maybe it was last Monday. There was sometime in the last couple of weeks where I knew I was going to be home with the kids. I think it was a Monday when my wife had – it was the Monday. The kids didn't have school or something. And so I'm like, man, I'm about to be home with these kids all day, you know. And the first thing I did when I woke up that morning was told them, put on some clothes, put some shoes on, we're about to go. And they're like, where are we going, Daddy? I'm like, I don't even know. And right now, I don't even care. We're just not going to be home. Because at times, it's like you say, when they're home, man, they will tear this place up. And sometimes it's just better to just go out, you know. And I'm like, I don't even know where we're going. We're just going to go somewhere. We have to go out of the house. And it's just, it's so much more peaceful. Everything is so much better, man. And it's funny you say that because I literally, that was maybe last Monday, I had to get out of the house with these kids.
Yeah.
But I wanted to ask you this, man. What has fatherhood taught you up until this point? You know, what are some of the things that you have learned through your experience in fatherhood?
So I am not a patient person. Right. But fatherhood makes you patient. Right. You got to control the things you can control. Right. Especially our kids are older now. Emily, our oldest, is 8. And the twins are 7. And our youngest is 5. And so they're, you know, kind of working through, you know, everything. They all have needs. Right. So I really had to learn time management. In addition to working, you know, full time, I've got to make sure that I do a good job of spending quality time with each of the children, kind of addressing their needs. We took a study at church about love languages of children. It's a really good book about finding what that child's love language is, because, you know, you can kind of hone in on, okay, what is really important, you know, to your child. And that's really what it's taught me, is to understand emotions, realize that something that's important to me might not be important to them, but something that's not important to me could be important to them. And how do I deal with that? And especially coming from an only child perspective, you know, where I didn't have to worry about that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And it's really been a cool lesson too, especially to see them grow. Last night I brought home some dinner, and so it was shrimp, but it was peel and eat shrimp, you know. And just one of the twins, he likes shrimp, but he's never seen the full version of the shrimp, you know. He's always had the fried shrimp, but he's never had it where you got to peel it, you know. So he was like, what's going on here? So it was taking that moment and kind of explaining, like, hey, you know, this is what a shrimp looks like. This is how you peel it, you know? And he's like, is that his legs? And I think he was ready to throw up the table or something. But I was like, no, you know, stuff like that. Just and enjoying the little moments in life. You know, we are in such a fast-paced society with technology, and, you know, we want everything right now. And sometimes it's hard to just kind of slow down and, you know, just kind of enjoy that picture that that child, you know, drew, you know, at school, right? You know, a lot of times I'll show you that artwork and it's like, okay, that's great. Let's go on to the next thing. But really stopping it and looking at it, you know, talking about the detail, asking questions like, what were you thinking, you know, when you drew this? You know, it's kind of interesting to see a kid's perspective on things.
Yeah.
So that's what it's taught me, is to slow down.
Mm-hmm. Yep, man. I have three pictures on my wall right now. My kids have been making these drawings, and I just told them, hang it on my wall, you know. And now my wife noticed them the other day. She's like, what are all these pictures on the wall? And I'm like, I don't know. The kids drew us some pictures. I'm like, hey, hang them on the wall, you know. So now they're like right by the door. So
yeah,
in the bedroom, you just see these drawings and you're like, what is that? But if you ask the kids, you know, they can describe every detail in that.
Exactly. Picture,
everything in it. You might not know, understand it, but they can literally go to every detail and tell you, you know, this is this and this is that.
And that picture is going to mean more to you in 20 years than any other artwork you're going to go to a store and buy, or go online and buy, you know, to decorate your house, you know, to be able to look back on those pictures, you know, that's really what it's all about.
Definitely. Definitely, man. You know, and thinking about that, you know, as we're talking about that, I always think, you know, like, man, that's something that I really missed out on. You know, I didn't grow up with my dad. And just, you know, that was something that I never, like, sometimes I think, like, man, what would I have been, you know, if I did have that dad there to appreciate me, you know, and just have that conversation with me, you know, if I have a drawing and my dad is sitting there talking with me and admiring my artwork. And, you know, like sometimes, like I think people, like you say, when you got to at times focus on those small things, because it might seem little, but to those children, you know, it could be everything, you know, just that the time that you're taking to ask them about their day in school. I try to make it a habit when I'm putting the kids down to sleep. I go to each one individually and I have a good 5-minute conversation with them right before bed and just let them talk, you know, and they're always ready. You know, my wife liked to say that they're like me. They will talk you to death. And, you know, I give them whatever's on their mind, you know, and every time they have something like, daddy, you know, this happened today or so-and-so. And I just sit there and I listen and I hug them and I kiss on them. And when they're done, I say, well, you know, I might give them some feedback. And, you know, that's always like our end of the night thing. Mm-hmm. And it's just so important, man, to have those little small, well, like we say small, but, you know, those are huge conversations that could truly affect the child, because that's something as a grown, I'm a 31-year-old man. And I look back at it and at times, you know, I really think, you know, like, man, I wish I had my dad growing up. You know, we have a relationship now and I'm thankful for that, where we could just get on the phone and talk with one another. But, you know, I know that there was a lot that I missed growing up, just not having that dad there. And I wanted to ask you about this. With all of that you just spoke about, what has been the biggest challenge when it comes to fatherhood? What has been that one thing that has challenged you the most out of everything that you've had to face?
Whew, that's a deep question. You know, remember, as men, we're not supposed to express our feelings, right? I just think that being a dad, the biggest challenge is to really walk the walk all the time, mm-hmm. right? And when you fall, you know, admit to your kids that, hey, I messed up. You know, I shouldn't have done that. You know, I'm sorry, whether it's if I got mad at them, right? If I was quick to anger and I shouted, you know, or said something I shouldn't have said, maybe used a word I shouldn't have used, and just, you know, explain to them, hey, sorry that happened, but this is how we need to act. Because especially raising, you know, it's really two different perspectives. You know, I'm raising three boys that are going to be men one day that have got to treat people a certain way with respect and dignity. They've got to treat, you know, their future wives with respect and with dignity too, right? So if I yell at their mother or raise my voice or something, I've got to be quick to say, hey, sorry, you know, I shouldn't have said that. You know, I got, you know, too excited, you know, things like that. And my wife should be quick to tell them too. Yeah, don't do that. but then my daughter, she's also got to see too that, hey, that's not okay. You know, that's not how you treat, you know, women. So, mm-hmm. I think for me, being a parent is just being that constant role model, right? Mm-hmm. And it is challenging, but you know, I really live my life taking it one day at a time. You know, I remind myself that Jesus says that today has its own troubles. You know, don't worry about the future, right? And so that's really how I live my life. Mm-hmm. And just focus in on the day and the daily task, and just kind of, you know, worry about the day. So.
That's good. That's good, man. Yeah. And that reminds me, and this is something that I think about, you know, we all have these challenges. And I think one of the main things that makes it really hard for men to talk about this stuff, because at times I feel like even for myself, a question that I always ask is, you know, is there grace for men? You know, is there grace? Because people, you know, when they see you, you know, doing a good job as a dad, you know, everyone applauds you. And you know, you're the best dad in the world, and you know, everything is okay. And it's at those times when you make the mistakes, you know, and you fall and you trip up and you say the thing that you shouldn't say, or you do something that you shouldn't do. And it's like, man, you know, is there grace? You know, is there grace for me? You know, do I have the freedom to fall? You know, do I have the freedom to make a mistake? And I know, like, at me personally, at times, you know, I feel like I gotta be a Superman. You know, it's like I gotta be, you know, gotta do everything right. And especially being a believer too, you know, and I believe I put that, there's pressure there also, just being a believer and knowing that I am to uphold a standard. But, and of course we do have grace and mercy there to cover us, but at times, even with you knowing that, it's still hard at times, because I know we can be really hard on ourselves, you know, because we make it's like, I don't know, man, it seems like when you fall, man, that is just, it's like the biggest thing in the world. And at times it feels like you can never come back from certain things.
You know, and that's a really interesting way to kind of look at it. You know, Anthony, you and I have got the same father, you know, God, you know, and his children, you know, he sent Jesus to die for our sins. So we do have that, you know, forgiveness and that grace. And, you know, he gives us examples like the prodigal son, you know, that, when he came back home, you know, there was rejoicing, right? Talks about in heaven when a sinner turns to the angels, thousands of angels rejoice, right? And that's the same way, you know, we are designed to fail, right? There was only one perfect person that walked the earth, right? And for the rest of the world, there will only be one perfect person that walks the earth. And so we have to remind ourselves, and it's hard. It's hard on a daily struggle for me, but I have to remind myself that I can strive to do the right thing. I'm going to make a mistake, but when I make a mistake, I pick myself up. Mm-hmm. You know, I lean on my wife a lot. We had a pastor that would call his wife the Holy Ghost in flesh, right? And then that's kind of the way I see my wife is that Holy Ghost in flesh, you know, is she's there. You know, she keeps me aligned, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, keeps us on that path of faith, you know. But it is hard to be, especially in today's world where, you know, culturally, everybody wants you to, you know, have a certain, you know, car in your driveway, a certain size house. You know, my daughter is 8 years old, and so, you know, she's dipping her toes into that social media world, and you know, there's starting to be conversations of, you know, hey, do I weigh too much? You know, things that a 8 year old should never have to worry about, exactly. Right? You know, and so there is all kinds of pressure in this world. And I think it's our responsibility as fathers is to, you know, just center our families, focus on what the Lord has provided for us, focus on what we're supposed to do as Christians, and everything else will work itself out.
That's good, man. That's some good stuff. You talked about your wife. How has marriage been?
Marriage has been good. There, you know, it's very good. We've had our peaks and valleys, just like any other, you know, relationship. My wife and I, Jennifer, we've known each other and dated for almost 20 years. Wow. This year, yeah. And so we've been married for 13 years. We met at the AA baseball park in Jacksonville. It used to be called the Jacksonville Suns. Mm-hmm. I was selling programs and she was working as a sunbeam, and she walked by the program stand and I said hello. So, and the rest is history. And we went to different high schools and things like that, and so I think that really helped our relationship, because we, even though we dated throughout high school, we didn't see each other all the time. So you know how some high school relationships kind of get that overabundance. And when they get out of high school, they're like, hey, we need a break or whatever. So, but I can tell you, we both, you know, have the same visions and goals, you know, which is good. We're both aligned how we want the children to be raised. And there's been some days, I'll be honest with you, Anthony, our bare minimum, this is kind of our inside joke, but if, you know, if we ever have the kids alone, our bare minimum is that whoever comes back home, the kids are alive. Whatever else happens is it, but the bare minimum is that you come back home and four children are alive, right? And if you do laundry along the way, then God bless you. But
yeah.
That's all you can do. We do have date nights. We lucked out, especially when the kids were really little. We had a standing babysitter once a week that would come over. And sometimes we would just take that time to, you know, go sit in the car and, you know, pay bills or go grocery shopping. But just something that two adults could do and connect. Go have a decent dinner, you know, where we didn't have to worry about, you know, wiping noses or, you know, taking somebody to the restroom, things like that, just being there. And really just leaning on each other if you're having an issue, right? We have always been really good. We don't assign tasks like, you know, my parents were never the type that, hey, you know, because you're the woman, you got to cook dinner and you got to clean the house. And because you're the man, you got to do, you know, X, Y, and Z. And her parents, they weren't really like that either. So that's helped us, you know, from having our house before kids, right? There was never like this, you know, underlying roles and responsibilities laid out. We just helped each other. And mm-hmm. so it's been very good. But, you know, we have our daily challenges. Like I said, we both work full time. So, you know, especially now with the kids in school, COVID's throwing an extra, you know, question into it. You know, when the kids go back, you know, how's that going to look? But, you know, when we started this journey, we trusted God that God had us, you know, under control. So that's what we continue to do is, you know, just work together and trust God, and he's got our best interests, you know, out there.
That's good, man. 20 years, man, that's definitely an accomplishment, just knowing that you guys have made it that long. You know, we just hit 10 years, my wife and I. Well, this is 11. So, yeah, man. And like you say, it's a challenge, you know, it has its ups and downs. And right. I wouldn't trade it for anything, man. It's a beautiful thing.
Exactly.
It's beautiful. What has been your proudest moment as a dad?
So, that's a really good question. You have to pick one. So, I would say that my proudest moment is just seeing that the kids have kind of grown up and have a harmony and respect for each other, right? And then that they also took that respect out into the world. I take really great pride that, you know, my kids that, you know, when they go out and they want to play with friends or they want to do whatever, they look at people for who they are on the inside, right? And, you know, they don't, you know, judge people off their looks and things like that. And so I think for me, that's been the proudest moment, is just seeing my kids really learning how to respect somebody for what they are, listen, you know, to people. It's been really cool, you know, to see that.
Oh, cool, cool, good. Knowing what you know now, what advice would you give to an 18-year-old Dustin Click?
Oh, Lord. I would tell him to slow down, enjoy the little things in life. Don't worry about what kind of car you want to drive. Don't worry about what kind of watch you want on your wrist.
Yeah.
just slow down, right? You know, maybe invest in this new technology, iPhones that are coming out. I don't know.
Yeah.
So that would be, yeah. I would just tell them, just slow down. You know, you're going to appreciate the little things more in life than the big things.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's some good advice right there, man.
Yeah.
Especially about that technology. I wish I knew about stuff like that.
Yeah.
But is there anything that you would like to say to any other young father out there that may be listening?
So this podcast is a really good podcast. You know, Anthony, I've been listening to most of all of your episodes, and you have got a lot of great advice out there. Fatherhood is not easy to do. And that's okay to realize that, hey, it's not easy. Ask for help, ask for guidance, you know, on different ways, whoever you feel comfortable with, finding somebody in this world that you feel comfortable talking to about fatherhood is very important, or listening to a podcast, you know, whatever it is, but just having that channel to go to. And then also too, realizing that you're going to make mistakes, you're going to stumble, you're going to fall, but it's what you do in those instances that are going to make you a better person and make you a better father, right? Mm-hmm. A simple, I'm sorry, this is what I'm going to do to, you know, fix it, goes a long way, right? And kids are just very important, and especially in today's environment, you know, you've got to really do a good job to raise your children in a respectful manner.
Oh, yeah. That's some great advice right there, man. You know, yeah, that's some really good stuff. Because, and I like asking that because at times I wish that I would have done more to learn about fatherhood before I became a dad. You know, I was around a lot of guys, you know, my pastor, I had a couple of other guys at the church that I could look to, but I don't think I asked enough questions. And, you know, I just believe I could have prepared more. You know, I just didn't know what to expect. And when it hit me, it hit me. But, you know, it's been a great thing, man, you know, being a young father. And, you know, I've just always taken pride in it, you know, because I know what I experienced growing up without a father. So that's just always been that thing that's pushed me going forward, you know, to know that I'll never give up. I never give up on my family, never give up on my children, never give up on my wife. And I want to be a great example for other people, you know, especially, you know, for the Black community, because for a long time, there's been this narrative that, you know, Black fathers aren't this or they aren't that, or we're absent and we're this, we're that. And it's like, I've heard it so much. And I said, you know what? When I become a dad, I am going to do everything in my power to change the narrative of that, because I know a lot of good dads of all different nationalities and ethnicities. I know too many good dads. And I just think that it is not highlighted enough. You know, it's just not something that everything that's always highlighted mostly is bad things about dads. And so I say, you know what, when I become a dad, you know, I'm going to do everything in my power to make sure that I put a spotlight on fatherhood. And I love it, man. You know, I love it. And I love seeing other dads with their children and getting advice, you know, getting advice and also giving it, because I just believe this is the foundation. I believe that the home is the foundation of the community, and the community is the foundation of the city. The city is the foundation of the state, you know, and so, you know, it just goes on and on, but it all starts right here. And I believe that fathers are the foundation of that home. You know, we are the foundation of the family. And if we're not in line, then that throws everything else off. You know, one of my favorite scriptures in the Bible is like the last verse in the Old Testament in the book of Malachi, where it says that God is going to send Elijah in the last days, you know, in that great day of the Lord. And he's going to turn the hearts of the fathers back to the children and turn the hearts of the children back to the fathers. And I just look at that, man, ever since I seen that, I'm like, man, you know, it's just so important for us to have a heart for our children and to love them and appreciate them and nurture them. That's us, you know, that's what we should be doing, man. And, you know, I definitely appreciate you supporting the podcast, man. You know, it was just really kind of a shock, you know, when you wrote me on Facebook and you're like telling me about it. I'm like, whoa, you know, that was just really unexpected to me, man. And, you know, I just really appreciate that support, man, because at times, honestly, if I'm all the way honest, you know, at times I feel like maybe this isn't reaching people, you know, maybe it's not effective the way that I wanted it to be. And at times, you know, it's kind of discouraging. Just sometimes, you know, to see, you know, sometimes I think it should be bigger, but I'm like, man, I've literally built this thing from ground up. I've done no marketing, no anything. Everything has just been what word of mouth and me just getting the word out. And I'm like, you know, and it's going great. You know, so many people do support it. And I just got to encourage myself in that way, man. And I just want to say, man, I definitely appreciate all of your support, man, and everything that, you know, everything that you said on today, man, is just, it's important to hear that. It was important for me to hear your story. I don't know about anyone else that's going to listen to it, but your story has helped me. You know, your the things that you said, I'm definitely going to take those things and try and add it to my own life and just try and continue being a better father.
Well, thank you. And you continue on with this podcast. Don't let the doubt creep in there. You're doing a great thing, Anthony. Bad news sales, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You know, it takes longer, it's harder to get the good news out, but that's what you're doing. And you continue doing that, because this is an important message. Fatherhood right now is more important than ever in our society, and we've got to get the good dads out there. So you keep doing it. I'm proud of you.
Well, yeah, thank you, man. I definitely appreciate you. Well, for all of my listeners out there, I appreciate you continuing to support. This has been another episode brought to you by Dad Can We Talk and Dustin Click. I pray that you guys will continue to be good fathers out there. For all of my women supporters, I know I got a lot of women supporters. Continue to encourage the men in your life, encourage your dad, encourage your children's fathers, and continue to spread the message that that fathers are important. You know, we are very important. We need fathers to be in place. So for all of my listeners, I appreciate you. And God bless you guys. It's another episode of Dad Can We Talk. Thank you, Dustin, man. Appreciate you.
All right, thank you. Have a good day.
Yep. All right, you too.